Let's just get the first things first. Sometimes the developer will send over an option. Sometimes the developer will send over an option with a lease. Sometimes the developer will send over a lease. Sometimes you'll get a easement slash lease, and sometimes you get an easement only. So, Tyrone, why don't you start off? What is your company's preference? Do you ever use options? Do you prefer a different type of document? What is your preference?
I think that's a great question, and I think what I want to do in navigating the answer is not get too inside baseball on the differentiation between leases for some sort of occupancy and general use of property or easements for putting a specific facility. What we often see is the developer has a couple of phases that they're going to need to go through in their development after they lock up the land. Right, I'm going to sign an agreement, and it may be the first of 200. It may be the last, but I still have to get a bunch of contracts in place and find financing, get through regulatory approvals, system impact studies. And so I need a period of time where I may or may not be conducting non-invasive studies, but I have this land locked up. I'm probably paying a lower amount of money for it. And then at some point in the future, whether it's the start of construction or it's the delivery of commercial power for profit, I'm going to flip into an operations term, and then we're going to really get to that 30, 40, 50 years. The question a lot of times is, what do we do? How do we cover that initial term? My company, it's called a development term in our agreement. We will frequently, we've done lease and easement agreements. I think we're switching more to easement-only forms for a few reasons. But we just build it into the document. Right, there's a term for up to a certain number of years, but if we commence, you know, if we hit one of those metrics for operations, it'll start earlier. Some folks go the option route. We don't do the option route because in certain states we have found that an argument we may have for a vested right if a zoning board decides to come based on opposition and change some requirement that we already got an SUP on is weaker. Again, we haven't taken that to any state Supreme Court, but based on conversations we've had with local council, we found that we had a stronger argument when we actually had an effective lease or easement right. You know, Wyoming is a unique example because there's an anti-wind law there that makes it more advantageous for us to have a lease until we get to construction, and then we can have sort of options for easements that are within the document that then spring out. Mm-hmm. But it's really, I mean, we try to take a lot of time to figure out what makes the most sense and what's the appropriate tableau of rights so that way we can, you know, sort of do everything that we need. And I think that's something we probably control a lot more from sort of four steps back from the initial negotiation, just to make sure that if anyone's going to change any of those material structures, they have to come talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually probably do a lot more options to lease than direct leases. To me personally, it's easier to separate out these two periods where you have very definitive rights. But honestly, it doesn't matter a huge amount unless you're looking at lease terms. I know that in some jurisdictions, if you have a lease with a development period in it, your lease term starts at that date. So if you don't define that elsewhere in your lease, you may be stuck with, you know, your lease commencing and you not having constructed anything for 5 years. Mm-hmm. Which can be problematic. So, and oftentimes it's also easier to explain to a landowner, here's an option. It lasts a certain number of years. And then here's the lease document. This is what it's supposed to look like. We'll try to make it as close to this as possible. So it preserves a little bit of optionality for the developer to come back later when they're finally ready and they've done a lot of diligence and tweak things a little bit. Sometimes it's a little easier to stomach.
Yeah. Well, and I would agree, especially for the options where we just have some terms and we don't have the agreement attached, that is something we will shift from time to time, especially for purchase or lease options mm-hmm. we're doing for certain projects. When we're like, we need to get this locked up because there's an RFP or there's a Q submission and we can't go through this process and they've indicated to us that they are going to bleed all over our document and we just sort of punt, get the rights and then move on, you know, assuming the ISO... takes an option as an appropriate site control right for our submittal, we just get an option in place and then we move on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the questions is, and I've practiced environmental law as well, is in some circumstances, since most of these environmental liabilities we're concerned about relate to an owner, which you may not be, but there's the operator status. And so some courts over the years have said, well, if you're a tenant, you have a lease, you may be liable for whatever's on the land, and so the developer won't have done the environmental study probably before signing the document. So does that factor into your decision, or how do you deal with that question?
So I mentioned a shift into easement-only form. I think it's one of the things that factors into our decision. We've seen a few different items that really make it preferable to have an easement in certain places. Another is the Agricultural Foreign Investment Disclosure Act, which requires a certain filing within 90 days to the FSA if you acquire interest in ag land, which is where we're all building, and you're a foreign person. And per that act, a foreign person has 10%, even passive investment, qualifies. And so you'll see a lot of folks who are shifting their forms to sometimes just decrease a heavy compliance burden. You know, we're all signing hundreds of new agreements a year, if not thousands, and you know, that's a factor as well if we're comfortable that we can get all of the appropriate rights in one form. So we've been taking both of those into account, and we haven't had any catastrophic issues, but we have seen the CERCLA ownership issue be something where it's really scared us a few times, and we needed to try to get away from that as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah.